You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, July 21st, 2010. This is episode 141, Wells Tech Road Trip, Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. Welcome back to the Wells Tech Podcast. This is for July 21st. We are in midsummer and also mid-Wells Tech Road Trip. And joining me in the passenger seat is Sally Draper.
Hey, Martin, how are you today?
I'm fine. Boy, is it hot here.
Yeah, I guess we're recording this show to be played while we're in the midst of final web training. So this is an exciting week for both of us as we're leading classes in Milwaukee.
And you had to remind me that that's coming up, too.
Yeah.
I haven't given it a second thought. Actually, this week I'm up at seminary all week teaching a productivity course to a class of about 20 pastors, which is a lot of fun. I think we're having a great time. So, but
busy
it makes
summer.
Recording really difficult, and we're recording this show way early. But it's always timely when we get together, right?
That's right, Martin. Whatever you say.
That's right.
So we do have a great interview to share today. I'm excited to get to talk with Ryan Rosenthal, who's a teacher at Faith in Fond du Lac. I'll make sure and check the spelling on Fond du Lac before I put it out on the web. And Ryan is going to share with us some really inspirational Web 2.0 stories that have taken shape in his classroom.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So without further ado, let's talk with Ryan Rosenthal from Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. We welcome Ryan Rosenthal, seventh grade teacher from Faith Lutheran in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, and the Northern Wisconsin District. Good morning, or actually afternoon, Ryan.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
I am well.
You've been a frequent contributor, but never actually an interviewee on the show. So a new experience both for you and for us. Thanks so much for joining us.
Not a problem.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your church, your school, your activities, your responsibilities, your deepest secrets, any of those things that you care to share?
Well, as you mentioned, I'm at Faith in Fond du Lac right now. This will be going on my third year now. I was originally in Appleton, so not too far of a move there. And been technology coordinator my entire career now, about 14 years, and got out of college, and they said, here, figure it out. And I've been kind of self-teaching since then. I did get my master's in educational technology a bunch of years ago now already from Marion University here in Fond du Lac,
cool.
as a matter of fact. So
cool.
kind of funny I moved there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as any tech person knows, that's good for about 5 minutes, and then everything changes on you. So
yes,
a lot of just self-education and trying to keep on top of things. I've got 5 kids, so that keeps me busy, too. Mm-hmm. And I've been trying to get into Faith and work on the technology. I did not replace anybody as technology coordinator. It was a new position. And one of the interesting things was everybody knew they needed one, but they didn't really know what I was supposed to do or why. Just one of those things that, hey, we need somebody here.
That sounds a lot like my position.
Yeah, kind of defining your own position as you go and trying to be everything to everybody kind of a thing. So it ranges from, unjamming printers or rebooting computers to trying to set up the whole network. And fortunately, I've got a lot of congregational help. One of the guys on the technology committee is a Cisco engineer, so he does most of the networking. And we've got a mom now who's actually an instructor at Marion and has been coming in and doing in-services for us and things like that. So,
very nice. Every congregation or school should have a Cisco engineer.
Definitely. I got very used to doing everything myself at all hours of the evenings, and now I just call him up and say, hey, what about this? And
sweet.
It goes a lot faster that way.
Yeah.
I was thinking every congregation should have a technology committee. Those are kind
Let's
of magic
start there.
Words.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, proud of you for that.
That's great.
Well, having a committee and actually meeting are two entirely different things.
Okay. All right. Well, Ryan, we were excited to get to talk to you today about a little bit of education technology. You are a tweeter, so we stay in a little bit of contact through Twitter. And one of the things that you tweeted about this past school year was a project that your students did with VoiceThread. So I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about VoiceThread, you know, what it is and how easy or difficult it was for you to get up to speed and, you know, get your students up to speed on the system.
Sure. I'd heard about VoiceThread from a couple different places. The Marion professor was one, and you guys were another one. And so just one of those days on a whim, I said, instead of doing my actual paperwork I should have been doing, I went to go check out VoiceThread and played with that for a little while. And it really, it doesn't take long to figure out what it's all about. It's a system where you can upload pictures, either like we did paint program, just very simple, or take pictures. The first graders actually got the ball rolling with because this technology mom had a kid in first grade, and they did a book project with Claudia with a Chance of Meatballs. And she took a picture of each kid, and then they were holding their artwork that they did for it, and then they read part of the story. And that's the other component, is you can record an audio part to it. And so what I did was went in and had them write their English paper. They had to write a creative story, and said, well, instead of just writing it, and what I had been doing in the past was having them type it up, put it into Google Docs, and then posting it as a web page. I thought, well, with VoiceThread, I can do the same project, except add a visual element, have them do some pictures, and then they can record it. And one of the biggest obstacles I find with other teachers, or even myself, trying to get you to do something is, well, how are we ever going to fit that in? Something's going to have to give. So my biggest encouragement is just pick something you're already doing and tweak it, rather than trying to come up with something new. So this was a story they were going to have to write regardless. It was something I wanted to put on the web anyhow, and then I turned it into art class and had them doing the paint project. And then right away, the first question is, well, paint on the computer, how is that really art? What I did is I showed them how to zoom in 800%, and then you can go pixel by pixel to make really detailed pictures, which then leads into a conversation about pointillism and how the individual little dots don't seem like much, but when you back up, suddenly you have this picture where everything blends together. And it beats listening to them stab their pencils into their desks for hours on end while they try to make that pointillism project. So it does take some time to try and get that all done. We'd spent about a week doing it of English classes and then a couple of art periods thrown in there to get that all in. And interestingly enough, when we did it, one of the biggest problems was just trying to get them to write a good creative story. They loved the technology. They picked that up pretty easily. And it was just trying to say, well, now's your chance to, you know, publish to the world, kind of a thing. And I don't know how many hits we would really get to the world, but to try and get them to really think about writing a good story for other people to read rather than just put something down on paper to make teacher happy.
A little more global thinking, right?
Mm-hmm. Trying to, you know, trying to make the authentic publication audience, that kind of a thing.
Sure.
They loved it. They had a great time with just drawing the pictures and trying to record their voices. And, you know, there are some technological difficulties that now, having done it once, I'll know better. We went into the lab and everybody did their pictures, and they got done about the same time. So we tried to upload them all. They had to do three pictures, and I had 23 students last year. So we were trying to upload all three pictures for all 23 students at the same time. That is definitely a bad idea. You've really got to stagger it out. We don't have near the bandwidth for that. And so we ended up I sent a bunch of them to break and just kind of let the computers run on their own while we tried to help a few. Eventually, we got them all, but having done it once, I would definitely stagger that out. Another issue was I didn't have enough microphones for the whole class, so we had to do a lot of sharing. And you also have to be aware of students in the background.
Right.
Some background noise.
A lot of background noise. Mm-hmm.
You know, especially when they make a mistake and they start laughing or something like that, and then somebody else's voice start, you can hear.
Sound like a busy call center after a while.
Yeah, exactly. It definitely did on some of them. I mean, we were blessed to have a lab, but it's a blessing and a curse because I had all 23 students in there at the same time then.
Right.
Which
right.
then creates some of those other issues, and you get the background noise and thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't have a lab, it becomes a problem getting time to get everybody on, but then you alleviate some of those issues about having enough microphones, having enough bandwidth, having enough background, and those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
When we got done, one of my students said, oh, let's do another one. And this is one of those seventh grade boys that really doesn't want to do anything and just kind of plods through doing whatever he can just to get by, kind of a thing. And he was very excited about it, and he wanted to do more of them. So I know that at least there's something new. They liked it from that regard.
Mm-hmm.
what I guess I would like to improve upon is trying to use more of the social aspect, because VoiceThread allows you then for other people to come in and also record and leave a message. And what we really did was just the one student put his presentation out there on the internet for people to see. We didn't really maximize on trying to get a community feel to it. So I want to try to expand that in the future, maybe have something where one student draws a picture and another student comes in and has to make up the story based on student A's picture, or, you know, each individual picture is a new student or something, where we can collaborate a little bit more.
Right.
It really wasn't a lot of collaboration, which is kind of the whole point of the VoiceThread. So we did it as a different way to present, and it was cool, and they liked it. But I'd like to expand and try to work the collaboration in there a little bit more.
Very neat. Sounds like a real successful tool, or at least successfully implemented tool that has a lot of future potential, too. There's obviously a lot of stuff that's available now that clearly wasn't available even 5, 6, 7 years ago, as far as technology is concerned. Anything else going on in the kind of the Web 2.0 world that you've been able to implement in your classroom? I know you use a Wiki and so maybe some other audio recording programs.
We've been working on the Wiki this past year, trying to implement that in. And again, to start off with, I simply took projects that I had been doing and morphed them into something else. And I think that's the easiest way to get started. I do the planets, and I had the students do PowerPoints on the planets in previous years, and then I tried to upload them into Google Docs again and present them that way, and had some audio issues and things like that. So this year we did the Wiki instead. And so I divided them up into partners and gave them different tasks or jobs to do, and then they each went to their planet site to do the Wiki instead of doing the PowerPoint. So again, it wasn't anything necessarily that I added or took a whole lot more time, because we already started with a project that I had already been doing for years and just kind of morphed it with a new technology. And then once you get in and do that, well, then I think you see the opportunities and ways that you can expand it. Again, the problem we ran into there was having all 23 kids in the lab at the same time trying to upload their information. Sometimes they were overlapping each other. And I'll just throw that out there with Wiki Spaces. The first time I tried it, I just had everybody log on as guest. And the problem you have there is when somebody overwrites somebody, you don't even get a warning or notice. Once I found out how to do a batch edit where you can add in all your students' names and passwords very, very simply with a batch machine, then I was able to give them all individual identities. You still have the possibility of deleting somebody else's work by overtyping them, but it gives you a warning. It says, hey, this page has been modified since you opened it. Are you sure you want to proceed? And so that way, at least, they know, oops, now who entered more, what's more important, that kind of a thing. So some of them divvied up and said, I'll research, you type, and some of them made sure they took turns. I had them sit next to each other, and that worked out all right. Another nice thing there is you're able to monitor everything real time. So you can sit there at a computer or a laptop or whatever you've got available and be checking and making sure that they're still working productively, everything they're putting is appropriate. I would be checking for grammar and things right away as they went, or making comments and suggestions. And it was really neat, as opposed to having them just sit at their desks and write on paper, and I have no idea what they're writing. But I could check right away and give them tips and insights and things like that. So that was kind of fun. Again, it's somewhat collaborative, but could be definitely more collaborative. One of the other teachers on staff is working on for our research papers this year. She actually is setting up a Wiki where it's got all the guidelines right there, and then there's going to be space for them to work. So that way they always have, they can't lose the sheet that explains the directions or how long they're supposed to be or anything like that. So it's a posted resource, but she's also going to set it up for us that it's going to be a workspace so that they can, at home or at school or wherever they've got internet access, go in and type in some of their project. It should be easier for us to keep an eye on how they're progressing, how they're doing. It'll also make peer editing a lot easier. You know, you can't, well, I forgot it at home when it's on the internet, and you can just log on and get it. So trying to expand it in that way. And I think that's been the neatest thing, is I didn't talk to her about doing a Wiki. I didn't try to push her as the technology guy or anything. She just saw what I was doing and said, hey, I could use that. And some of these technology things are really starting to take on a life of their own.
Mm-hmm.
And as a technology director, you kind of feel like, well, how can I get these teachers to step in and use these things? And one of the best ways I've found is use them yourself. And as they start to see, or parents start to request, or, you know, the kids mention something, the other teachers start to then jump on the bandwagon on their own. They don't feel like they're being pushed, and they kind of get excited about the various things.
Right.
So and in that regard, kind of natural... I'm sorry, Ryan. I was just going to say, in that regard, your whole faculty, I understand, is blogging, which is quite an accomplishment as well. When we visit your school website, we can go to the blogs for each of the teachers, and it looks like you're using Blogger as the platform for your classroom blogs. Is that right?
Yep. Well, and that was very natural, too. I had started it because a friend of mine had been doing it, and I thought, well, this is easy. I can do this. So I did it for about a half a year. And kind of got some of the parents used to checking and things. And then I asked if, you know, anybody else want to do this? I can set you up and get you going. And all the upper graders said, yeah, that'd be great. And I thought, well, the lower graders, you know, maybe they don't really want to get into it. But we realized that they always do a weekly newsletter. And so, again, it wasn't something brand new that was, oh, how are we going to find the time? They just cut and pasted their weekly newsletter that they typed up anyhow and put it in the blog. So it was actually very natural for them and really wasn't a whole lot of extra work. And when it came down to it, we just set up the whole school, just did K to 8, and 1 through 8 have been doing it fairly faithfully throughout the course of the year. And I think another benefit of that is the parents are getting more and more used to going and checking, because as they go on up the grades, it's always there. I mean, I used it for my kids all the time. It was really nice to go and make sure they had all their homework filled out and everything. So that's been a blessing. We used the... Some of the teachers said, well, I don't know if anybody even reads that thing. So I went ahead and set up with the Google Analytics to keep track. And what it seems like is the people who check are checking very faithfully. We don't have 100% of the parents, you know, checking every night, but the people who do check are coming back night after night after night after night. And so that's just, it's another way to throw communication out there. Because, you know, as we all know, students don't always bring everything home like they're supposed to. So this way, instead of digging through my son's backpack every night to see if there was a note or something, I just check in the blog and go, hey, you're supposed to have a blue slip for me today?
Right.
And it's, you know, just nice to keep on top of those things.
Yep.
So that the other communications that are being sent, I'm at least aware of that I'm supposed to be looking for.
Right. Right.
So that, you know, took off very easily. I just, once I got it all set up, people just started using it and are kind of, I don't want to say addicted, but it's part of the routine now.
Sure. Cool. Well, as we close, Ryan, any recommendations that you might have for teachers? Teachers are obviously all across the spectrum at different points in their kind of their technical acumen and how they're integrating technology in the classroom. Anybody, any recommendations for people just kind of starting out where to start with integrating technology into their classrooms?
Definitely. I mean, one is you just got to take the plunge and do it. Mm-hmm. And then two, as I mentioned before, a lot of times we think this is going to be this huge, big job, and I have to reinvent the wheel. And if you can find something you're already doing and just find the technology to help you do that or do that in a different way, it's a lot easier to start than with, I need a whole new project to create from scratch kind of a thing.
Right.
Like Jason's blog that he had the other day where it was talking about using the tool. You know, don't just use it to use it.
Right.
And I've been guilty of that myself. Well, hey, let's just try this program and not really having a good reason to
What's
use it.
What's the plan? Right. What's its ministry purpose?
Mm-hmm. Like we had with Audacity.
Right.
When I first became accustomed with that, I took the students in the lab and we just goofed around and made some different songs. And it was fun and neat and all, but we didn't really have an educational purpose for it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not really worth the time then.
Right.
But when we were talking about, I was at teachers' conference and somebody had mentioned how for literature, they had their students write a 30-second commercial that they then read to the class. Well, right away, my mind went, why read it to the class when you can put it in Audacity and post it on the Internet?
Right.
And so I took those same kids that I had taught Audacity to and said, all right, now we read Tom Sawyer. You need to come up with a commercial about 30 seconds in length telling other people why they should read Tom Sawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And they worked in partners. They wrote up the whole thing, and then they went in. And it was amazing, just some of the really neat things we got. Some of my goofiest kids had very straight-laced, proper, why you should read this book. A couple other kids that really just kind of sit quietly in the back of the room. One of them did a rap, and they just had a lot of fun with it. And suddenly out of nowhere, these quiet kids are doing these really creative activities.
Right, right.
And it was just a totally different experience for them, and they really got a kick out of it.
Engaging.
And it really wasn't anything huge and exciting and different than I was going to do anyhow. But instead of doing it to the class, they got to do it and put it on the Internet, and then parents can come and hear it.
Very cool.
You know, Ryan, you make someone wish that it was already back to school time with all your enthusiasm and exciting
ideas. Yeah, let's get this stuff going. Yeah. Very good. Yeah. Ryan, again, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate your insights. And boy, it sounds like there's no end, really, to some of the tools that could be used. And as you said, I think probably the most important part is trying to figure out, you know, where's the educational aspect of it. Technology is cool, but in the end, it really needs to be tied to some educational or certainly ministry purpose. So,
well, and the other thing is there are so many out there, it's very easy to get overwhelmed.
Yep.
I mean, I only follow a few people on Twitter, and I look at all that stuff, and I go, oh, man, I'll never have time. And if you let yourself get overwhelmed, you'll never do anything.
Yep.
So,
yep.
You know, just deal with the fact that you can't do everything no matter who you are and pick something and run with it.
Yep. Pick your battles. Absolutely.
Great advice.
Right.
Not even Sally does everything.
No, but
not
pretty close, I'm thinking.
No.
Pretty close. Very talented lady we have. All right. Thank you, Ryan, for your time. Blessings on your work and your preparations this summer.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Have a great year. Bye-bye.
A lot of irons in Ryan's fire these days.
Yeah, really exciting to hear how he's been a leader in technology and how all of his staff is picking up on that and making use of it in their classroom. And I think that's a great encouragement to all our Wells Tech listeners who are leaders in their respective congregations and schools, mm-hmm. that, you know, don't have to drag them kicking and screaming. Just do your thing, and
yep.
and they will come.
We've talked about VoiceThread before. I think Gail has talked about it, and I mm-hmm. think we've other people have mentioned it as well. But as Ryan mentioned, and we, I think, have talked about a number of times, the important part is not the technology, but its place in the whole scheme of things and in our classroom ministries and figuring out how best to integrate that into a purpose and give it some legs and give the student a chance to understand its potential use rather than, boy, this is a cool technology.
Yeah, I really agree with that, Martin, and I encourage people to kind of think of it like putting on their carpenter tool belt, and they have great, amazing educational resources at their disposal already. Those are tools in their tool belt that they can pull out and use traditional resources, and now just add some of these Web 2.0 resources and use them as appropriate, not mm-hmm. use them for the sake of using the tool, but where it fits with your classroom objectives.
Yeah, and I think Ryan would agree if we would... I think he even said it, you know, don't be afraid. You know, there's, you can't do everything. Pick something, give it a shot, and if it fails, it fails. Go on to the next one and figure it out as you go. There's no harm in that. Mm-hmm. Shall we move on to our picks of the week?
One of my favorite things about the Wells Tech podcast is having the opportunity to make picks every week. And actually, I love it when our listeners suggest picks for me, and that's what happened this week. I had a tweet from Jason Schmidt, our tweeting teacher, who recommended that I speak about the new version of DIGO.
DIGO.
And Jason is a big DIGO user, and DIGO just recently announced version 5.0, which was a pretty major upgrade, I understand, and
mm-hmm.
Just allowing easy sharing, access from all types of devices, including iPad application support, where you can actually highlight things and stuff on the iPad. You can't do that on the iPhone or iPod Touch. You can only view your DIGO links and add DIGO links, but on iPad you can actually do the highlighting and stuff with the drag and drop kind of technology that's available. So lots of neat enhancements to DIGO, and I have a link to their blog post, which includes a video overview of all the enhancements. So if you're a DIGO user and you aren't up on all the changes yet, you'll want to watch that video and learn about them.
Very cool. I noticed that there is an Android app. I just am looking at that. PowerNote. It says add text note, take pictures, import text messages, add bookmarks to your library. So if you're doing any browsing on your Android-based smartphone, you've got a tool there to kind of capture that stuff, which often I do. I'll read my Google Reader on my phone when I've got some downtime, sitting in a place where I can't really do much but look at my phone, and that's going to be a great tool. Good find.
It is powerful. I downloaded the iPod Touch app, and just having my links available to me that I've saved in Digo is just a huge plus.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Very good. My pick is a software pick as well, and this has come up on the show before. I want to say it was Jason Schmidt who brought this up initially, but it's never been an official pick. And that's a tool called Harmony. They've recently changed the name slightly. Instead of Harmony with a Y, it's Harmony with an I-E. It's harmon.ie, I believe, is the website. Let me just double check that before I... Mm-hmm. That's it, yep. And it's an add-on that for Outlook users. So anybody using Outlook, I think this only works on Windows machines. But I know we do have a lot of Outlook users, and it's a tool that I really couldn't live without at this point. It's my personal and professional management toolbox, so to speak. But Harmony gives a little bit different dimension to it, and it essentially is an add-on that allows you to connect your Google Docs to your Outlook. So you can easily, you create a pane, it creates a window pane in your Outlook, and it shows all of your Google Docs right there. So you can actually manage Google Docs in this window, but you can also drag docs as attachments or drag docs as links. So when you send out an email and want to send an attachment, you're really sending a link to your Google Docs. So you don't have to shuffle around large files or worry that they've got the latest version. If you send a link to a Google Doc, one of your documents there, they're always going to get the latest copy. You can manage permissions on the fly right there. So if you only want them to have view access, you can do that. Or if you want to be able to give them contribute rights or the ability to edit a document or collaborate on a document, you could do it that way as well. They also have a SharePoint. Those of you that are using SharePoint, a tool that works with Outlook and SharePoint as well. Price is free, and I think it will be free for at least the foreseeable future. But if you use Google Docs and you use Outlook, this is probably a tool you're going to want to have.
I love that price tag, and mm-hmm. I love the ease of integrating
all
these,
in one place. Yeah,
yeah, cloud-based tools, and where you can get to them and work with them seamlessly. Yeah. If you try to wrap your brain a little bit around how it's all structured, it might get complicated.
Yeah.
But if you just use it and enjoy it, then that's the good thing.
Yeah. Find it, see if it works for you, and then figure out how best to use it on a day-to-day basis. And this really is a time saver. You don't have to open up a separate web browser. You know, to get at your Google Docs, this kind of integrates the whole process. Community feedback, Sally.
And guess who we heard from? We've mentioned him twice already.
That's right.
Jason Schmidt, our tweeting teacher out in Gethsemane, at Gethsemane in Omaha, Nebraska, who is just a regular contributor to the show, and we appreciate all that he does in terms of sharing technology with the Wells Tech listeners. He added to Digo a couple of interesting links that I wanted to talk about today. One is a link to Google Apps for Education Certification Program, where you could actually be kind of a leader in learning about Google Apps for Education and be able to train other people on it as well once you hold this certificate. And basically there's training materials, and you pay to take exams. I think there's a series of 6 exams to get completely certified on Google Apps for Education. So this may be something that a group of congregations or schools would want to go together to pursue having someone take these exams and be their go-to person for Google Apps for the congregations. So look like an interesting link and worth checking out. And then secondly, Jason shared a link to a site I believe we've talked about before, Martin. I don't know if this rings a bell with you, but mm-hmm. Bible geocoding.
Yep.
Maybe this was one of your picks in the past, but a really interesting website where
I think this was a ministry resource we tagged, yeah.
Where they've looked at the locations mentioned all throughout the Bible and mapped them using Google Earth. So if you're looking at a particular section of the Bible, chapter of the Bible, you can drill down to and see a Google Earth map of the exact locations that are mentioned in that particular chapter. So quite an impressive tool for Bible study enthusiasts, or maybe for Bible class presentation, either on the church or school level, to be able to see the actual places that are discussed in the Bible.
Yeah, give you a little bit of perspective of you know, the spatial relationship between, you know, Damascus and Jerusalem, or Crete, or any of those things, how they look on a map, and you can kind of zoom in and zoom out and see the terrain, and very cool. And this is obviously a natural use of technology.
Mm-hmm. So thanks very much, Jason, as always. Mm-hmm. And lastly, in community feedback, we had questions this week from two different people about online church directories. Yep. How should we go about putting a secure church directory on the web for our members to be able to access? Mm-hmm. And that's a great question, Martin. I'm hoping you might have some good recommendations there.
Yeah, we had that, interestingly enough, we had basically the same question from two different people. One was my daughter, Alicia Cameron, who is at a small church in Greenwood, Indiana, and Brent Nemers from Atonement in Plano, Texas. Both of them are in smaller churches, but one is looking for a pictorial directory to use online. The other is, you know, something that could expand for a changing membership and give people the ability to edit their information. And I guess I don't have a real good solution. There are a couple things that you always need to keep in mind when you're putting your membership information online. And that's, Sally, one of those is security, right?
Obviously, you don't want to, make any of that data publicly available. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have some kind of a security layer to publishing that kind of data so that people would log in with a username and password, essentially, to be able to access it.
Yep. Final Web has that capability, although I don't think that's its sweet spot. You can give every member of your congregation a username and password, but there's no great way to manage that, for one. Or you could just have one username and password that everybody uses, and that's not a great security mechanism either. So that's probably not the best approach. There are other tools that do this, and they are typically tied to church information systems, and usually those are a little bit more expensive. I know our Shepherd Staff product that we have a relationship with Concordia and make a 10% discount available to Wells congregations. They are beginning to develop an online component that is part of Shepherd Staff itself, but they have a sister product called Member Connect, where all of this is possible, but I find the price tag a little bit steep. It's starts at about $40 a month, and it has a whole intranet system attached to it. So you don't just get the online directory part, you get, you know, calendaring and all kinds of intranetty kinds of tools that may or may not be used. So that would be one approach. The other would be, Sally, I'm assuming, just some kind of low-tech Google Doc. Yeah, or you could use Google Apps, I suppose, right?
Or Google Sites. I was thinking of a Google site, right, for an intranet, and we've had some people write in with that, mm-hmm, as an option as well. The common denominator with all of it is you're going to need to have people willing to sign in with an,
yep,
account. You know, you're going to have that whole account management aspect to whatever option you use. If it's Google Docs or Google Sites or Google Apps, they're going to need a Google account to get access to, mm-hmm, it. And it may be that your members don't want a Google account. So it is definitely a challenge.
Yeah, this is an area where I think there is room for invention out there, where people can latch onto a product that works and share that. And clearly price would be an issue, certainly in a small congregation, but I think even in a large congregation they're going to be price sensitive, because you have to measure the value of doing this versus not. So
it'd be really nice if it had, you know, the whole self-management, kind of like the MailChimp, mm-hmm, where it's all just, every time they look at it, they've got the link right there to go in and change their account, and it's really seamless and easy for them.
Right.
So
right,
hopefully we'll see something like that developed.
Okay. Well, that will about do it for the show this week. Tune in next week as we continue our road trip. We're not totally sure where we're headed next, but we will by then, to be sure.
Get a map out, Mike.
That's right, and a pin. All right, our Wells featured artist this week is Cross to Glory and their song My Old Friend from the album Life's Song. Thanks everybody for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
In this world, we all need a friend. One we know to be there to the end, to the end. A friend's love that will never fade, but be our strength so we prevail, we prevail. There goes my old friend, be with me to the end, oh my old friend. Jesus gave his life for me there on Calvary, oh my old friend. Jesus. I've saw friends about everywhere. Looking to this world, I didn't care, didn't care. Sin and sorrow, death and despair. When others failed, you were there, still are there. There goes my old friend, be with me to the end, oh my old friend. Jesus gave his life for me there on Calvary, oh my old friend. Jesus. Look what God has done, giving his own son. Look what God has done for us. Give us faith that we, so that we believe, we are called the friend of God. Cause there goes my old friend, be with me to the end, oh my old friend. Jesus gave his life for me there on Calvary, oh my old friend. Jesus. My friend testifies, he intercedes before the holy God. For me, he pleads we'll see the greatest love he showed the way. For my sins, his life he gave away, gave away. There goes my old friend, be with me to the end, oh my old friend. Jesus gave his life for me there on Calvary, oh my old friend. Jesus. It's not that we chose him, but he chose us. He's called us friend, and him we trust, him we trust. Friends of God, hear his command. Love as I've loved you without end, without end. There goes my old friend, be with me to the end, oh my old friend. Jesus gave his life for me there on Calvary, oh my old friend. Jesus. Look what God has done, giving his own son. Look what God has done for us. Give us faith that we, so that we believe, we are called a friend of God. Cause there goes my old friend, be with me to the end, oh my old friend. Jesus gave his life for me there on Calvary, oh my old friend. Jesus.